in Matthew chapter 9, verses 35 to 38. And those verses just give us the immediate context for our motto verse. Matthew chapter 9, verse 35. Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them, because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. And if you were here this morning, we thought a little bit about that, didn't we? People being like sheep without a shepherd, people being harassed, people being bullied. I think is the word that Spence used. People being pulled in this direction with their life, being pulled in that direction with their lives. And Jesus sees people that are helpless, being dragged in all these different ways to live their lives and to get their fulfillment in their lives, all totally hopeless and helpless. Just like sheep wandering over a field or the hillside without a shepherd to give them any kind of direction, any which way to go. Jesus sees the crowds like that. And he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. So ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." A little bit later on, we're going to be thinking about the implications of that and what Jesus goes on to say to his disciples into chapter 10.
Starting at verse 35. Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." He called his 12 disciples to him and gave them authority to drive out evil spirits and to heal every disease and sickness. These are the names of the 12 apostles. First, Simon, who is called Peter, and his brother Andrew, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew the tax collector, James son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus, Simon the Zealot and Judas Iscariot who betrayed him. These 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions: "Do not go among the Gentiles or enter any town of the Samaritans. Go rather to the lost sheep of Israel. As you go, preach this message: the kingdom of heaven is near. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those who have leprosy, drive out demons. Freely you have received, freely give. Do not take along any gold or silver or copper in your belts. Take no bag for the journey or extra tunic or sandals or a staff, for the worker is worth his keep. Whatever town or village you enter, search for some worthy person there and stay at his house until you leave. As you enter the home, give it your greeting. If the home is deserving, let your peace rest on it. If it is not, let your peace return to you. If anyone will not welcome you or listen to your words, shake the dust off your feet when you leave that home or town. I tell you the truth, it will be more bearable for Sodom and Gomorrah on the day of judgment than for that town. I am sending you out like sheep among wolves. Therefore, be as shrewd as snakes and as innocent as doves. Be on your guard against men. They will hand you over to the local councils and flog you in their synagogues. On my account, you will be brought before governors and kings as witnesses to them and to the Gentiles. But when they arrest you, do not worry about what to say or how to say it. At that time, you will be given what to say, for it will not be you speaking, but the Spirit of your Father speaking through you. Brother will betray brother to death, and a father his child. Children will rebel against their parents and have them put to death. All men will hate you because of me, but he who stands firm to the end will be saved. When you are persecuted in one place, flee to another. I tell you the truth, you will not finish going through the cities of Israel before the Son of Man comes." A student is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. It is enough for the student to be like his teacher, and the servant like his master. If the head of the house has been called Beelzebub, how much more the members of his household? So do not be afraid of them. There is nothing concealed that will not be disclosed, or hidden that will not be made known. What I tell you in the dark, speak in the daylight. What is whispered in your ear, proclaim from the roofs. Do not be afraid of those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather, be afraid of the one who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? Yet not one of them will fall to the ground apart from the will of your Father. And even the very hairs of your head are all numbered. So don't be afraid, you are worth more than many sparrows. Whoever acknowledges me before men, I will also acknowledge him before my Father in heaven. But whoever disowns me before men, I will disown him before my Father in heaven. Do not suppose that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to turn a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies will be the members of his own household. Anyone who loves his father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Anyone who loves his son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And anyone who does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. He who receives you receives me, and he who receives me receives the one who sent me. Anyone who receives a prophet because he is a prophet will receive a prophet's reward, and anyone who receives a righteous man because he is a righteous man will receive a righteous man's reward. And if anyone gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones because he is my disciple, I tell you the truth, he will certainly not lose his reward.
Well, being afraid is a horrible feeling, isn't it? It can just paralyze you. I'm sure many of you know that. You kind of freeze on the spot, don't you? If the fear that you're feeling is really bad, you can lose all ability to think clearly or act in any sort of controlled manner. It can be a really horrible feeling. I don't know what might make you afraid. See, at the extreme end of the scale or the spectrum is what's known as having a phobia about something. I found a website that lists all the phobias that there are. There's absolutely loads of them. And I wonder if you know any. So I'm going to ask you if you know this phobia. So please don't go all quiet on me. I know it's Sunday evening and it's late and you've had a belly full of church lunch. But I'm going to ask you some and ask you if you know what they're a fear of. So don't worry if you get it wrong. I've deliberately picked some awkward ones. You might be able to guess, actually. Here's the first one for you. Ecclesiophobia. Anybody got any idea? Somebody said that already, didn't they? Sorry? Yeah, Emily, can we have the slide? Yeah, fear of church. See, if there's one thing you're going to go away with from this evening, none of you fear from that. So there's a good start, isn't it? Okay, here's the next. Hold that slide, Emily. Here's the next one. Electorophobia. Electorophobia. Any ideas? Just an inkling? Electric. Yeah, I texted that to Faye, and that's the first thing she said. Good guess. Anybody else? You're going to go with electric? Can I have the slide, please, Emily? Chickens? Anybody fear chickens? I know Jeff doesn't. He's got quite a few. No fear of chickens. Okay, so we're going good so far. Emily, hold the slide on this one. What about ephebiphobia? Ephebiphobia. Shall I spell it for you? E-P-H-E-B-I phobia. Ephebiphobia. Any ideas? Anyone have just a wild guess? Go on. I'm getting shakes of heads. Any idea? Donkeys. Close. Can we have the slide, please, Emily? Teenagers. Fear of teenagers. And how can you fear? I mean, look at them. Gorgeous people, aren't they? Last one, a little bit more seriously. What about this one? Again, you might be able to guess this one. Again, Emily, hold the slide. Anthropophobia. Anthropophobia. People, fear of people. Emily, can we have the slide? Yeah, fear of people. I wonder if you can relate, though, seriously. I wonder if you can relate to that phobia. Fear of people. Because it's possible to be afraid of people. I wonder if you've ever felt that. Felt afraid of someone. You've been in fear of them. And have you felt that fear when you've tried to share the gospel with them? When you've tried to tell them about Jesus? You know that moment comes, doesn't it? The golden opportunity is there. They ask a question or show a little bit of interest, and fear has gripped you. You're frozen. And fear, actually, well, it's stopped you from speaking about Jesus. And Jesus knows that you'll feel that. He knows I'll feel that. Jesus knew his disciples would feel afraid of other people. They would fear other people as they preach about the kingdom of heaven. But Jesus says to his disciples in Matthew chapter 10, particularly verses 1 to 31, which is as far as we're going to go this evening, that they mustn't fear other people. That they should not be afraid to speak about Jesus and about the kingdom of heaven. And Jesus says the same to us this evening, which we'll come to see. If we're a disciple of Jesus this evening, we're not to fear other people when speaking to them about Jesus and about the kingdom of heaven. We'll see why, because Jesus gives his disciples and so us some reasons as to why we're not to fear other people. So that's where we're going. But our context for Matthew chapter 10, particularly verses 1 to 31, is our motto verse of chapter 9, verse 38. Can we have that slide up, please, Emily? There it is. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. That's the motto verse for the year ahead. Spence said this morning that Jesus told his disciples to pray that verse. Will you pray that verse? Will you commit yourself to praying that verse throughout this year? But like the disciples found out, will you be prepared, as I am, that the answer to that prayer is you and me? Because that's what the disciples found out. Have a look with me at Matthew chapter 9. Let's start at verse 38. Well, let me start at 37. Sorry. Jesus said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. So ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest fields." Look what Jesus does next. Chapter 10, verse 1. He called his disciples to him, gave them authority to drive out evil spirits and to heal every disease and sickness. These are the names of the 12 apostles. First, Simon, who's called Peter, his brother Andrew, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew, the tax collector, James, son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus, Simon the Zealot, and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. This is what the disciples found out. The workers that they're praying for, well, it's actually themselves. The disciples are the answer to their own prayer. They're the ones who are to go as workers into the Lord's harvest field. And as we pray this verse, chapter 9, verse 38, we too need to be prepared. The answer to this prayer, well, it's actually you and me. We're to go into the harvest field. Yeah, of course, we should be praying for missionaries and supporting them and encouraging them and looking to send people out. But let's not forget that Chippenham is fully part of the Lord's harvest field. And we're the ones who are to go to the people in Chippenham. It's you and me. We're the answer to the prayer of Matthew chapter 9, verse 38. But what does that mean for us? What does it mean to go into the harvest field? Well, Jesus instructs his disciples about two big things, I think, this evening. There's a lot in these verses, just in verses 1 to 31. We're not going to be able to cover everything. If there's something comes up and you think, well, why hasn't he said about that? Do come and ask me afterwards. Because my aim really is just to cover these two big things. And just to help us with what's going on, I've put those two big things under two questions, which are these. There's the first question. Well, what are the disciples to do in the harvest field? It's the first question. Again, we'll look at this just in a few minutes' time. But the second question, just so you know it, is this. What is the harvest field going to be like? And let me say, both questions lead directly into why Jesus says to his disciples to not fear people. So please don't lose sight of that as we work our way through this chapter, because that's where we're heading. So our first question, what are the disciples to do in the harvest field? And Jesus instructs his disciples to preach about the kingdom of heaven. Can we have the first slide? Thanks, Emily. Verse 5, have a look with me, please. These 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions. Do not go among the Gentiles or enter any town of the Samaritans. Go rather to the lost sheep of Israel. As you go, preach this message. The kingdom of heaven is near. Disciples are to go into the harvest field, into the world, and speak about Jesus and his kingdom. Speak about how people can belong to his kingdom and of what it means to be a part of Jesus' kingdom, all of which the disciples already know because Jesus has already told them. You know, we haven't got time to look at it, but Jesus has been teaching about his kingdom back in chapters 5, 6, and 7. And essentially, belonging to the kingdom of heaven, well, it's calling Jesus your Lord, seeking to live life under his good, loving, and wise rule, adopting Jesus' way of living life. The disciples are to go to people and tell them that they can belong to Jesus' eternal kingdom, one full of true life and hope and tremendous blessing. And they do that by coming to Jesus, by turning from their willful rejection of God and following Jesus' lead, living their lives by obeying Jesus. But that's not all. The disciples are also to give people a foretaste of the kingdom of heaven. Again, Jesus has been doing that himself in chapters 8 and into chapter 9. But now Jesus gives his disciples his authority to show people, to slightly open the window, as it were, so that they can peer inside and get a glimpse of what the kingdom of heaven is like. Can we have the next slide, please, Emily? Have a look at verse 8 with me. Heal the sick. Raise the dead. Cleanse those who have leprosy. Drive out demons. Freely you have received, freely give. Do not take along any gold or silver or copper in your belts. Take no bag for the journey or extra tunic or sandals or a staff, for the worker is worth his keep. Now let me say that it is a special time and a unique authority that Jesus gave to his disciples. We can't expect Jesus to do that for us today, sadly, you may feel. But let's not lose sight of what the disciples had the Jesus-given authority to do. Yes, they would speak about the kingdom of heaven, and they would show people what Jesus' kingdom would be like. A kingdom where there's no pain, no discomfort. A kingdom where there's no heartache, where there's no tears, there's no struggles. A kingdom where there's no illness, no sorrow, no brokenness. Amazing, isn't it? The disciples gave people a glimpse of that because of the authority that they'd been given by Jesus. No, we can't heal people of their illnesses. We can't raise anyone from the dead. We don't have that authority. But as we tell others about the good news of Jesus and of his kingdom, even though we can't give them a glimpse through the healings like the disciples did and performed, we can speak about what his kingdom is like. We can share of the hope that we have for eternity with Jesus and tell people that Jesus' kingdom is a perfect kingdom, a real place that's not like this broken, sinful world. A place, as John wrote about at the end of Revelation, let me just read this verse for us. Revelation 21, verse 3. Now the dwelling of God is with men, and he will live with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death, or mourning, or crying, or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. So we can take people to God's word and help them to see what God has said will happen for those who respond to the good news of Jesus by calling him their Lord and coming into his kingdom. And Jesus' instruction continues. He says to his disciples that they can expect what they're going to say to be accepted. Have a look at verse 11 with me. Next slide, please, Emily. Thank you. Whatever town or village you enter, search for some worthy person there and stay at his house until you leave. As you enter the home, give it your greeting. If the home is deserving, let your peace rest on it. If it is not, let your peace return to you. And when Jesus says a worthy person here in this verse, he's referring to someone who will accept the disciples' message about Jesus and his kingdom and respond positively to it. Jesus doesn't mean find someone who's good enough, because that's impossible. No one's good enough. It's finding people who will receive and accept what you've got to say. See, the point is that as the disciples enter a town or a village or someone's home, they will meet people who will respond positively to what they hear about Jesus. And those people will show an interest in Jesus and they'll want to know more about him. I think that's what also Jesus means when he says in verse 13, if the home is deserving, let your peace rest on it. You see, you'll know, disciples, when you go to a town, you'll know when you meet someone if they want to know more or not. You'll have that sense of peace with them as you talk about Jesus. So maybe they'll ask you questions about Jesus. Maybe they'll simply just want to listen to what the disciples have got to say and let them speak without interrupting them. Maybe people will show an interest in Jesus and his kingdom and invite the disciples into their home. They'll welcome what the disciples have got to say. The disciples will have peace. And we can lose sight of that, can't we? It's hard to speak of Jesus today, isn't it? Yes, people don't seem interested at all. But the fact is that some will respond positively by accepting and receiving the gospel, by believing in it and being transformed by it. And it starts with you and me meeting people. In fact, Jesus said in there, verse 11, searching for people. Did you notice that? Jesus says to his disciples, whatever town or village you enter, verse 11, search for someone who will accept your message about me. So too, we've got to search. And as we search, we can be sure that we will find people who will accept Jesus. We will find people with whom we can have peace with and start a conversation with about Jesus. A conversation that leads them to ultimately calling Jesus their Lord. That will happen. Some people will respond positively. Let's not lose sight of that. But Jesus also says to his disciples, you've also got to expect rejection. Can I have the next slide, please? Thanks, Emily. Verse 14. If anyone will not welcome you or listen to your words, shake the dust off your feet when you leave that home or town. I tell you the truth, it will be more bearable for Sodom and Gomorrah on the day of judgment than for that town. Now, I'm sure you don't need much convincing about this, but not everyone, and it may feel like not many at all, will respond positively to Jesus and to his kingdom. Some will simply reject it. They'll not show any interest at all. They won't talk to us because they simply don't want to know. They won't give us the time of the day to listen. We won't have peace with some people. But what's challenging here in people's rejection to Jesus and of his kingdom is what Jesus teaches his disciples to do in that situation. What's that? Well, the disciples, they're to give a sign of judgment. That's in verse 14. A sign of judgment to people who respond negatively to Jesus. Because they are, in fact, bringing judgment upon themselves and so condemning themselves because of their rejection. That's what the act of shaking the dust off their feet symbolizes. Now, let me cut to the chase for a minute. Does that mean we're to give up on people? If they reject Jesus, well, it's their own fault, isn't it? They'll have to face God's judgment for themselves. That's simply their own fault. We may say, well, I've tried telling them. I'm getting nowhere. They're just too hard. It's too difficult. They refuse to listen. They've been extremely rude and angry about it, actually. Well, they're on their own. I'm not going to keep trying to talk to a brick wall. It's pointless. Well, I think the short answer is no. We're not to give up on people for several reasons. Let me just give you one reason. It comes from 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 9, a verse with some wider context that's talking about Jesus coming back. Let me just read that verse for us, 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 9. The Lord is not slow in keeping his promise, as some understand slowness. He is patient with you, not wanting anyone to perish, but everyone to come to repentance. See, if someone won't give us their time or their ear to hear the good news of Jesus, we can certainly keep praying for them. We may stop physically speaking to them about Jesus for a while. After all, we're not to ram the gospel down people's throats. But that doesn't mean we write them off. They've said no, maybe said no several times. They may seem to have the most hardest of hearts. But we've got to remember that God's grace is more powerful. Their no for the moment doesn't necessarily mean no forever. An opportunity, whatever opportunity that may be, whether they go through some ill health or they have a serious accident or something else that just shakes them, an opportunity may come in which to speak to them about Jesus and about his kingdom. The negative response of no doesn't necessarily mean never. Well, that last bit of, and then there's the last bit of instruction from Jesus to his disciples. That comes in verse 16. Because the disciples are to be shrewd and innocent at the same time. Verse 16. I am sending you out like a sheep among wolves. Therefore, be as shrewd as snakes and as innocent as doves. Don Carson, the American theologian, very helpfully commented on this verse, and he'd said that shrewdness means wisdom. But if we're not innocent as well as wise, wisdom can easily lead us into being deceitful towards others, into trying to manipulate the situation to our own advantage or our own benefit. And so we need to be innocent at the same time as wise, innocent to prevent us from being deceitful. But innocence at the same time, innocence needs wisdom. Because if innocence is missing wisdom, then we could become ignorant or even naive. And so we'll be the ones then that are exploited or taken advantage of. And we need to heed Jesus' instruction here as we go into the harvest field, because we need to show wisdom and innocence together at the same time and use wisdom and innocence to rightly understand the situation or the person that we're talking to about the good news of Jesus and of his kingdom. Because as we use wisdom and innocence to rightly understand the person or the situation, that will mean that at times we've got to choose our words carefully. Now, I'm not saying we don't speak about Jesus or the gospel. I'm just saying we're careful about what we do say and what we don't say. And at other times, we'll have to be cautious about what we do in the situation that we're in with the other person. Let me just give one example, just to help make it a bit more concrete, if I can. If there was a young girl, or guy for that matter, who just started coming along to church here at Emmanuel, they were not a Christian, and you didn't know them very well. They were having some personal difficulties, and genuinely, they just needed some encouragement, and they needed some help. Would it be a good idea for you to go on your own to her or his house to see them on their own? You see, you could be innocently trying to help them. They've got a need that you can help them with. But you see, wisdom would act as a control, and wisdom would make sure that you either go to see them with your wife if you're married, or if you're not married, certainly go with someone else from church. And that's not having a low or a skeptical view of other people or of somebody else. That's using wisdom and innocence together at the same time. We need to use both with people in the situation that we might be in as we speak to them about Jesus. Well, we need to move on to our second question. What is the harvest field going to be like? Can we have the next slide, please, Emily? This is what Jesus covers next. What is the harvest field going to be like? And we'll look at this a little bit more quickly as it's a little briefer. Because the simple answer to this question that Jesus gives in instructing his disciples about the nature of the harvest field is that it's going to be hostile. Thanks, Emily. And that hostility, well, it consists firstly of being persecuted. Have a look at verse 17 with me. Be on your guard against men. They will hand you over to the local councils and flog you in their synagogues. On my account, you will be brought before governors and kings as witnesses to them and to the Gentiles. But when they arrest you, do not worry about what to say or how to say it. At that time, you will be given what to say, for it will not be you speaking, but the Spirit of your Father speaking through you. And that hostile nature of the harvest field will mean persecution. But did you notice the help that the disciples will have? See, Jesus says, when you're being persecuted for following me, when you're being flogged, when you're being arrested, when you're being falsely accused, disciples, please remember that you'll have the Holy Spirit living in you, helping you, actually the Holy Spirit speaking through you. So don't worry about what you're going to say and how you're going to say it in front of the authorities as they persecute you, because you haven't got to think about what to say or even about how to say it. The Holy Spirit will be giving you the words you need. So trust in him in the moment. A harvest field will be hostile. You'll be persecuted for following me, says Jesus. And secondly, that hostility in the harvest field will also mean that you'll be hated for following Jesus. Verse 21. Brother will betray brother to death, and a father his child. Children will rebel against their parents and have them put to death. All men will hate you, all people will hate you because of me. But he who stands firm to the end will be saved. When you are persecuted in one place, flee to another. I tell you the truth, you will not finish going through the cities of Israel before the Son of Man comes. Jesus is saying that this hostility in the harvest field, it'll also mean hatred. People will hate you because you're a disciple of Jesus. In fact, Jesus says in verses 24 and 25, let me just paraphrase those verses for us, that Jesus says to them that they hated me, so they're bound to hate those who follow me. But Jesus also says that those who stand firm in the face of that hostility, in the end, they will be saved. Jesus says, you can, my disciples, have full assurance of that. There's no doubt about it. It's not if or might. You will be. In the light of eternity with Jesus, for which you've been saved, the hostility you're currently facing, well, it won't last. It is only for a time. It has an end point. And in the light of the hostile nature of the harvest field, in the light of knowing there'll be persecution, in the light of knowing they'll be hated, it's completely understandable to feel fear, isn't it? Which is what Jesus turns to next in verses 26 to 31. Jesus instructs his disciples three times. Three times Jesus says to them, do not be afraid. So let me ask you, can you relate to that? I know we've covered a lot of ground and covered it quite quickly. You know, in very brief summary, Jesus instructs his disciples to go into the harvest field and preach the good news of Jesus and of his kingdom. As his disciples go, they can expect some to receive Jesus, but others to reject Jesus. Either way, Jesus' disciples are to be wise and innocent at the same time as they go and preach the good news to people. And while they're in the harvest field, they can expect hostility. They can expect persecution, expect to be hated, all because they're disciples of Jesus. And that hostility can cause the disciples, as it can cause us, to fear the harvest field, fear the people we're trying to reach for Jesus. See, I appreciate we all feel that fear at different levels and at different times. But let's be honest with each other and ourselves, that telling others about Jesus, well, it can be fearful, because we can fear that we'll lose friends. We can fear that we'll make enemies. We can fear that we'll offend others. Not deliberately, but the gospel can be a very, very offensive to some. And the problem is this. If we fear the harvest field, then we won't go. And if we don't go, we won't preach the good news of Jesus and of his kingdom. People will continue to be like sheep without a shepherd, hopeless and helpless. And so Jesus says to his disciples, as he says to us this evening, do not be afraid. Don't be afraid of the harvest field. don't fear the people you're trying to reach for me. Jesus says three times, do not be afraid. Do not fear. And in doing so, Jesus gives us three reasons as to why we should not fear other people. And as we come to this, and look at these three reasons that Jesus gives us to not fear people, can I ask you to picture someone in your mind who you've been trying to speak to about Jesus? Will you do that? Someone maybe that you work with, maybe somebody you live next door to, maybe it's a family member, someone who's not a Christian, someone you may have or haven't yet spoken to about Jesus. Will you picture that person in your mind? And just let Jesus instruct us, you and me, about not fearing them when we try to tell them about Jesus. Just picture one non-Christian that you could have a conversation with about Jesus in the coming week, coming month, coming year. So what does Jesus instruct us? Well, firstly, Jesus says that we're not to fear people because at the end, when Jesus returns, the truth will be revealed. Can we have the next slide, please, Emily? Thank you. I think that's what Jesus is saying to his disciples in verse 26. Have a look at verse 26 with me. So do not be afraid of them. There is nothing concealed that will not be disclosed or hidden that will not be made known. See, Jesus has already referred to his return after the cross and ascension in verse 23 of Matthew chapter 10. And because of the future tense of this verse, Jesus is pointing his disciples forward and saying that there's nothing going to happen and nothing that's going to be said that won't be brought out into the open. And when things are brought out into the open, well, they're seen for what they are, aren't they? Whether good or bad, whether true or whether false. You see, whatever happens, even if it happens and it's done in secret, well, one day it's going to be brought out into the open and revealed. Because Jesus will return to judge everything everyone has ever done and said. There's nothing to be kept secret. It will all be revealed and seen for what it is. And Jesus then says to his disciples, speak, go and proclaim my kingdom publicly. Verse 27. What I tell you in the dark, speak in the daylight. What is whispered in your ear, proclaim from the roofs. Jesus says, don't fear people, because what you've got to say is true, and it will be shown for being true. Because when Jesus returns, as Paul puts it in Philippians chapter 2, verses 9 to 10, let me just read those two verses for us. Philippians chapter 2, verses 9 to 10, Paul wrote this, God exalted Jesus to the highest place, and gave Jesus the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus, every knee, every single knee will bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth. And every tongue, every single tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. Everyone, whoever they are, will see Jesus and acknowledge that he is the Lord of everything and everyone. So speak about Jesus, because he's truth. The message of the good news of Jesus and of his kingdom is true, and it will be revealed as true when Jesus returns as judge. And as we hold tightly to that fact about the good news of Jesus, so our fear of the person we're trying to speak to about Jesus will disappear. One of the things that we could fear in people is what they'll think of us when we talk to them about Jesus. Perhaps we think that they'll just think I'm a little bit weird. I've got some strange ideas. Maybe I'm just a complete idiot. Or I'm just totally strange. Or we fear how they'll react to what we've got to say about the hope that we have in Jesus. And that preoccupation with what we think they'll think of us and how they'll react to us and what we've got to say, well, that can generate fear in us and actually stop us from speaking about Jesus. But as we grow in our conviction that the good news of Jesus is true and will be shown to be true when Jesus returns, then we'll be much less likely to fear what they think of us or fear their response to what we've got to say. Because when Jesus returns, our words about Jesus that we've spoken will be shown for the truth that they are. We don't need to fear people because the truth will be revealed. Secondly, Jesus says to his disciples and to us that we not to fear people because we're to fear God. Go to the next slide, please, Emily. Verse 28. Do not be afraid of those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather be afraid of the one who can destroy both soul and body in hell. See, if you fear God, then you won't fear anyone else. If you fear God, the one with all power and all authority, the one who can send body and soul into hell, you'll not fear another person. Fearing God leaves no room for anyone else. But the opposite is also true. Fearing people means that there's no room for fear of God. In fact, if we fear people, then we've reduced God to a little God, and we've made the person much bigger than God. I read these words on this verse, which I hope you find helpful. Person said this, let us revere him, let us revere God, in whose hands they themselves, with soul and body, are everlastingly secure. Let us not be scared of earthly opponents who can accomplish so very little. Fear God because only God deals with people's eternity. The person you or I are speaking to about Jesus, well, they're just another human being. I know it's obvious, but they have no more, no less power and authority as you or I have over eternity. We're to fear God, who's greater in every way. We need to keep God as a big God by fearing him over fearing other people. Well, thirdly, Jesus says that we're not to fear people because we are of great worth to God. Can we have the next slide, please? Verse 29. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? Yet not one of them will fall to the ground apart from the will of your Father. And even the very hairs of your head are all numbered. So don't be afraid. You are worth more than many sparrows. Let's have a look at verse 30. I wonder if verse 30 comforts you to know that God knows you and cares for you, right down to knowing every hair on your head. God's sovereignty is such that not even a little bird will die without God allowing it. Yes, God is a big God who deals with matters of people's eternity, but God's bigness includes his power and authority over the little details, right down to a small bird, and even every hair on your head. Jesus says that his disciples are worth more than lots of little birds. It's easy to forget that God's fully sovereign over every area of our lives. See, when we're caught in the moment of fear, it doesn't feel like anyone's in control. But Jesus says, don't fear other people when speaking to them about me and my kingdom, because you are worth a lot to God. It doesn't matter what people think of you, even if they don't think much of you for following Jesus, because you don't get your worth from them or from what they think. You're cared for and loved by, and you get your worth from God, who values you highly. Remember your worth before God. He values you more than anyone else can or will. So speak about Jesus and his kingdom. Don't fear people. The world is hostile. People will persecute us and hate us. But let's not fear, because if we fear, then we'll not speak about Jesus to other people. See, that person that you're thinking of in your mind's eye, the person with whom you'll have a conversation, will you please take just these three things away from this evening to not fear them? Please remember that the truth you speak of will be revealed as true. You are, as I am, are to fear God. And you are of great worth to God. So get your worth from him, and not from people.